ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 21, Text Number 8. Sutta Uvacha Tad Adirajasya Yasho Vishrambitam Tad Adirajasya Yasho Vishrambitam Gunair Ashishair Gunavat Sabhajitam Shita Mahabhagvata Sadaspate Kausharvin Pratha Granitam Archayan Word for word, please repeat. Sutta Uvacha
Sutta Uvacha
Sutta Goswami said
That
Adirajasya
of the original king
Yasha
reputation
Vrijambitam
highly qualified
Gunai
by qualities
Asheshai
unlimited
Gunavat
fittingly
Sabhajitam
being praised
Shatay
Vidura
Mahabhagvataha
the great saintly devotee
Sadhapate
leader of the great sages
Kausharvim
unto Maitreya
Praha
said
Granantam
while talking
Archayan
offering all respectful obeisances.
Translation Sukha Goswami continued, O Shaunaka, leader of the great sages, after hearing Maitreya speak about the various activities of King Prithu, the original king, who was fully qualified, glorified and widely praised all over the world, Vidura, the great devotee, very submissively worshipped Maitreya Rishi and asked him the following question. So this text does not have a purport, so we move on to text number 9. Text 9. Vidura uvacha so vikshita prathur viprae labdha shesha surarghana vibratso vaishnavam tejo bhavavorya bhayam duduhagam. Translation. Vidura said, my dear Brahmana Maitreya, it is very enlightening to understand that King Prithu was enthroned by the great sages and brahmanas. All the demigods presented him with innumerable gifts. And he also expanded his influence upon personally receiving strength from Lord Vishnu. Thus, he greatly developed the earth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Because Prithu Maharaj was an empowered incarnation of Lord Vishnu and was naturally a great Vaishnava devotee of the Lord, all the demigods were pleased with him and presented different gifts to him to help him to exercise in exercising his royal power. And the great sages and saintly persons also joined in his coronation. Thus blessed by them, he ruled over the earth and exploited its resources for the greatest satisfaction of the people in general. This has already been explained in the previous chapters regarding the activities of King Prithu. As will be apparent from the next verse, every executive head of state should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Prithu in ruling over his kingdom, regardless of whether the chief executive is a king or a president, or whether the government is monarchical or democratic. This process is so perfect that if it is followed, everyone will become happy, and thus it will be very easy for all to execute devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnanati Nirandrasya Jnana Janashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, as we see, Maitreya Rishi is going on describing to Maharaj Vidur the passings of Prithu Maharaj. And Maharaj Vidur is so curious that he wants to hear more and more. He is feeling so enlivened by the pastimes of Maharaj Prithu that he is asking him to narrate more and more pastimes of Maharaj Prithu. And here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that because he was an empowered incarnation of Lord Vishnu, he was naturally a great Vaishnava devotee of the Lord. And because he was a great Vaishnava devotee of the Lord, all the demigods were also very pleased with him. And who in the past have you heard is such a great devotee that he was able to chase Mother Earth? He was himself a very virtuous and dutiful leader. And when he felt that Mother Earth was not giving the grains that she was supposed to give to sustain the citizens, he had the ability to chase Mother Earth and put her to task and question her why she was not doing her duty when she was getting her share of the sacrifices. So his abilities are beyond the material level. He could do things that most kings cannot do. And he was able to then level the earth. He was able to extract from the earth various items that were necessary. And not only him, even the demigods and the saints and sages then milked the earth. So in this way, he was able to do extraordinary things. And not only that, he also, before that he performed the 100 sacrifices. Of course, there were 99 and they were considered complete because when the Supreme Lord is pleased, then all your activities are considered complete and done. And also he leveled the earth. He leveled the earth so that the water can be sustained and then the earth can grow more plants and vegetation and natural growth for the citizens to be able to survive. So Srila Prabhupada points out here that everyone should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Prithu. So who should we follow in the footsteps of, and why is it said that we should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Prithu? It's because he has perfected his life in every way. He was a dutiful king, and what is the prime duty of a king? To look after his citizens. to be a father to his citizens, and he was doing them perfectly well. And he wasn't just doing that at a material level. It was not an activity of just social welfare that he was doing. He was also facilitating their spiritual progress. And that's what makes him great. Because he was looking after their ultimate welfare and not just their basic material needs. That's what makes him great. So therefore, even Lord Vishnu himself comes and blesses him and instructs him. And Prabhupada therefore mentions here that we have to follow in the footsteps. And he said all governments and leaders of all sorts should follow in the footsteps of Maharaj Prithu. Now, and he bases it on an instruction given to Arjuna by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna instructs Arjuna. Because Arjuna was a bit disappointed when he saw that his own relatives were on the other side in the Kurukshetra war, and that his own gurus and grandfather Bhishma and his cousins, and he would be fighting with them and killing them. And that was not a very desirable thing for him to do. But being a Kshatriya, he had to be dutiful. So Krishna was telling Arjuna to follow his nature, to be a Kshatriya. You see, the kings were Kshatriya and they had the Kshatriya spirit in them. And they should not, out of a temporary situation, give up doing their duty. So in chapter 3 of text 21, Krishna tells Arjuna, Yad yad acharati shreshtas tad tad eva tarojana. Whatever great men do, common men will follow. Sayat pramanam purute tadastat anuvartate. Whatever action is performed by great men, common men will follow in their footsteps. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So this is how Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna that he should not become dismayed and become distracted from his duty. Because Arjuna was then saying that I would rather forgive whatever Duryodhana and his friends have done to him and live in the forest. But Arjuna is in a way saying, don't try to act like a Brahmana, because you are not a Brahmin. You're a Kshatriya. And your duty is to rule. And your duty is to protect. And your duty is to retaliate in a proper manner when something like this is done to you. Duryodhana had usurped their kingdom. And they had lived in the forest. They had even accepted undue punishments that were given to them, or consequences that were given to them out of losing the gambling match and so many other things. You see, Duryodhana was trying to trouble them all the time. Even then, when they were in exile, he would go there oftentimes or send Durvasa Muni or somebody else to cause trouble to them. And yet, look at Arjuna's heart. He was so magnanimous that he still wanted to forgive them, because he didn't want to offend them. So that is the greatness of a Kshatriya king. This is one of the qualities that comes out. And that's why Krishna was warning him. He said, you don't deviate from your duty and set an example. And similarly here, Srila Prabhupada said that Prithu Maharaj has already set up so many examples that we must follow in their footsteps. So what Krishna has said, the concept he introduced in Bhagavad Gita has been applied and tested here in Bhagavatam. And Maharaj Prithu has actually demonstrated how great kings should live and how their behavior should be, so that common men can follow them. The leaders of the world can follow after him and then be successful as he was. So the most important thing for a Kshatriya is their pride. They cannot give up their pride. For example, Dhruv Maharaj, even at the age of 5, was so offended and so hurt when his stepmother asked him not to sit on the lap of his father, that he wanted to go to the forest and wanted to get a kingdom greater than his grandfather. So this is, and pride does not mean that you do it for the sake of your personal needs, but you do it for the sake and benefit of others. Because Arjuna did not fight the battle then, because personally he didn't want to fight. So who did he fight for? He fought for the benefit of the citizens. and he fought to establish law and order. And thirdly, but most importantly, he fought because Krishna instructed him to do so. And that's what is the highest aim or goal, that we follow the instructions of the Supreme Lord, which is presented to us through the acharyas and through the scriptures. So the Kshatriya spirit always means fighting. Fighting is involved if we have Kshatriyas or if they have to maintain law and order. Fighting in itself is not a very pleasant thing, and it's not desirable, and it is often the last resort. But so then in that case, to be able to fight, you need to have capable soldiers or capable armies who can do that. So only to that extent is fighting allowed, that you do it to maintain law and order. If you think, or if you decide, okay, let's not fight, let's not have an army, let's be completely non-violent, that does not practically work, because there will always be some unruly people who will not follow the injunctions of the scriptures just because they are told to, because they are good and what are the benefits. It doesn't make sense to them. So to control such rascals and fools, then there has to be some fear created in them. And to create this fear, there are armies, or there are people who can police them, who can guard them, and who can maintain law and order. There are consequences. So in this way, to maintain civility, we need some fight. And also, just in the previous chapters, as we saw, that when King Anga left the country because he was so disappointed by his son King Vena, he was so embarrassed by the activities of his son King Vena, that he tried everything to reform him, he couldn't. And in the dead of the night, he just left his entire kingdom, his wife, his country, everything. He just went to the forest. And then there was a gap. There was no king. And then what was happening? Thieves and rogues, they became rampant. They were looting the people. They were causing disruption in the society. It was not safe anymore. The general people were suffering. So then they had the sages, the senior most citizens of the kingdom, had to make King Vena the king. Although he was quite unqualified to be the king, but he became the king. But he was so cruel and so strict that the thieves and rogues just disappeared. That he was just a terror to them, and they did not do anything. So in that sense, we need to have an authority who can act as a symbol of fear for those for whom it is difficult to maintain law and order, to accept the rules and regulations and to follow them, simply just by knowing that they are meant to be followed. So to that extent, then we understand that non-violence may not work. Not very long ago, those of you from in the Indian background know that Mahatma Gandhi was considered a great leader in India. And he was considered a great propounder of the theory of non-violence. He believed in non-violence. And he always wanted, whenever he wanted to achieve something from the Britishers, he would go on a fast. Fast until death, if whatever he asks for is not fulfilled. But people take advantage of some of the policies that he made. And sometimes it doesn't work. Because immediately after the partition, when the countries, two different countries were formed, and then Pakistan demanded that we want you also to divide the wealth and the weapons, because when after the partition, India had still had all the weapons and all the money was with India. So then Mahatma Gandhi said that no, we should be fair and there should be equality, and you should give it to them, their share. And the politicians said, no, this does not make sense. It can lead to chaos. We would prefer not to. So then they declined his request. So then he decided to go on fast. So he was fasting. Now he was a greatly respected leader at that time in India. So the politicians then, out of respect for him, gave the money, the funds, and the weapons were given to Pakistan. And guess what happened? Immediately Pakistan attacked India, straight away. So in this way, if you give power to fools and rascals, this is what happens. They have to be kept in control, you see? And equality doesn't work at all levels. Equality to the extent that you're not being biased to the other person, but equality doesn't mean that you can treat people of different intelligence at the same level. There is a very inspiring pastime in Mahabharata where Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he was still the ruler, and that time there was to his court were brought four people. They were offenders. They had stolen something. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj asked them, what did they do and how it all happened? So then he found out that one of them was a Brahmin, another was a Kshatriya, third one was a Vaishya, and the fourth one was a Shudra. So they were from different backgrounds. So then he gave, for all of them committed the same crime, they were the party to the same crime, but Yudhishthira Maharaj gave them different punishment. Because he expected that the Brahmin, who was learned in the scriptures, knew that what he was doing was a crime and also knew the consequences. And because he had read the scriptures, he also understood that this is something that's not to be done. And also being a Brahmana, he was in mode of goodness. If he wanted, he could refrain himself from that crime. And yet, in the association of other three, he went ahead and he committed the crime. And then he also punished the Kshatriya, because being a Kshatriya, it is his duty to protect or to stop any robbery or crime in the country. But instead of doing that, the Kshatriya man is doing exactly the opposite. He actually joined the other three and he committed the crime. So in this way, the Kshatriya was punished for doing this. And the Vaishya. Now Vaishyas are in mode of mixed mode of passion and sometimes a little bit ignorance. So then he was also punished because he, being a Vaishya, he knows that when you do business, you do some trade, profession or occupation that fetches money. So there is no need to steal. You do some business, you engage in some activity and in return you get money. So in this way, Maharaj Yudhishthir explained to them why what they had done was wrong. And the person who was from a Shudra background, he wasn't much disturbed with what he had done because he had just joined the other three. He was not learned in the scriptures and he was not a Kshatriya by in spirit. And he also not was a Vaishya who knew how to earn money. Now Shudra class of men, they work for other three classes. And they are not given a lot of wealth or they are not given independent projects to do because they just don't have the ability to do those. They are given sufficient funds to sustain, and they work for the other three classes. Like they work in the fields as farmers or they work in the factories. So they're given these kind of activities to perform. So you see, in this way, Yudhishthira Maharaj was not being biased, but in fact he was being very just, very fair. So one who is aware of what needs to be done, and yet he makes a mistake, he commits an offense, a sin, then he needs to be punished more than one who is just not at that level of intelligence, who does not have the ability, like the Shudra or the Vaishya. So in this way, equality, what Mahatma Gandhi had actually demanded, be equal and give the wealth to them because now they are a separate country, is not desirable and it's not recommended in the scriptures. The scriptures recommend that you discern, you should have the ability to discern, to have the intelligence to understand what, where, what punishment needs to be given or what should be the consequence for each individual. It cannot be the same for everyone. So in this way, some of the policies of Mahatma Gandhi were not very laudable, they were not very appreciable. In fact, Srila Prabhupada had mentioned, he had actually written a letter to Mahatma Gandhi. And he had mentioned in that letter that now the war of independence is over, India has got its freedom, now you should retire from politics because your aim was to help India get its independence, and now India is independent, so you please retire and you help me in preaching the message of Bhagavad Gita. And he also mentioned that if you don't do so, there could be undesirable consequences. And coincidentally, soon after that incident had happened, where Mahatma Gandhi was there in a procession, or and he was shot. He was shot by another person. So Krishna was warning him through Srila Prabhupada, who had written a letter especially to him, to say that now he should retire because his mission had fulfilled, and that he should join him in spreading the message of Bhagavad Gita to every town and village of India. So this is it was seen in recent countries, in many countries, like the kings and the leaders of the modern day. To what extent are they following the scriptures? Not very long ago, it was I think during the 80s and the 70s, when communism was very popular in the world, in the Eastern Europe and in Russia. So communism, the rules used to be so strict that that time nobody used to dare to steal or do any robbery or theft. Like, crime was next to nothing. It was next to zero in those countries. But then after the collapse of communism, like the governments and the individuals who came into power, things actually became worse, because it was a nexus between the government and the mafia. Now see, this is a complete contrast to what has been mentioned in the scriptures, complete contrast to how Maharaj Prithu has been ruling the world and how the present day leaders, they rule the world. In fact, these days you have to pay money to be safe. Like the big business organizations, to remain safe, they have to pay money to the mafia. So the mafia will not come and kill them, and the mafia will protect them from other people who will want to kill them because they want their money. So this is the kind of protection you're getting these days, unfortunately. But it should happen naturally. The leader or the king of the country, it's his duty to protect his citizens, and you should not have to pay anything for this. In the Satyuga, there used to be no armies, because most of the people were Paramhamsas that time. There were only a few handful who were engaged in activities other than the activities of devotional activities. But then in the Treta Yuga, the armies were formed. But there were clear rules and regulations of how you had to fight a war. And a Kshatriya, from the very beginning, was trained in those warfare activities. And they used to fight face to face. And the armies were like Vedic armies. Like if the charioteers, they were on the chariots, and they were foot soldiers. So there was cavalry, there was infantry, there were horse soldiers on the horses. And the rule was that they used to fight face to face. And they had rules that if a person who's on a horse, a soldier sitting on a horse, will not fight a person who's walking on foot. And if he had to fight, he would get down from his horse. And he would have the same weapon that the opponent has. Not a higher or a more powerful weapon. That's how they fought. See, this is called chivalry. You're chivalrous. And you have the strength of character. So you don't cheat the other person, even in a fight. So the point was not that you had to win. Of course you had to win for your country, for the safety of your country, but not to win for a personal safety. And the soldiers used to wear such nice dresses. They were properly covered in the beautiful armors. But compared to these days, where when if you see soldiers fighting on borders, they will wear dull green or brown dresses, so they're not visible. So it's more like a guerrilla warfare. They don't dare to come out in front of the enemy. They don't want to be killed. You see? Whereas in those days, people were just so, the Kshatriya spirit was so strong that they would just be right ahead in front. They wanted to fight their enemy. They would challenge their enemy. And they were not afraid of death. You see? And also Krishna also has given the same message to Arjuna when he was becoming a bit bewildered, and he had said he did not want to fight. He said, if you fight, you will, and if you die in the battlefield, then you die fighting a Kshatriya. You die doing your duty, and for that you will enjoy the heavenly planets. And if you if you win the battle, then you enjoy it on this earth. So in this way, fighting was not something that he could not do. He just had to do it. It was his duty. And duty not for his personal benefit, but for the benefit of others, for the benefit of the common citizens. So in this way, the Kshatriya kings are expected to maintain the codes of dharma. So as contrary to these codes of dharma, these days the warfare or the military activity has become quite demoniac. You see, because sitting right in front of your screens, you can press a button, you can release a missile that will go thousands of miles away, and it will kill innocent citizens who are completely unaware of where it came from and what they have done to deserve it. So this is the kind of warfare that is happening today, and it's quite cruel because they have personally not done anything wrong, but just because they happen to be from an enemy country, they will just get killed by these bombs and missiles that are released from far ends. And Srila Prabhupada was also very appreciative of those who had physical strength, who had Kshatriya qualities. And not very long ago in India, there still used to be kings who had such strong heavy armor that they used to wear that we can't even carry it. Forget about, even four people can't carry it these days. That's how heavy it is. But they used to wear that armor and used to be sitting on a horse and fighting with a sword. And that sword is like, how many kilos? We can't carry it with, like, four people can't carry that sword these days, that they used to use it with one hand to fight in the battle. So Srila Prabhupada once met a king, a person from a royal family in Punjab, in India. And he went to his house, and on the wall he saw there were lots of heads of lions. And then he asked him, where do you get these heads from? And that man said, I have killed them. I've shot them. He said, I've shot them. He actually didn't fight with them, like not a physical fight, but I've shot them. And he said, even that is good. You had the ability to be in front of the lion, and the lion will not stay in front of you. He will just jump at you from anywhere. And yet he was able to, he killed them. So Srila Prabhupada was appreciative of that he was brave enough. He had the Kshatriya spirit to be out there in the forest and had the ability to shoot at a lion, to go hunting. And Srila Prabhupada also used to praise Guru Gobind Singh. He was from a Sikh background, the Sikh religion, and he was the last guru of the Sikh religion. And he actually was more like a warrior who fought and because Punjab is the northernmost state of India, and they used to get a lot of Muslim invasions, a lot of attacks used to come, and that part of the country used to get affected the most. So even though he was a guru, when it was time to protect the citizens, the common masses, he actually fought. And at last he was fighting, and he got very badly stabbed in his stomach, but he somehow tied his stomach and he kept on fighting till he was bleeding and he dropped dead. And Srila Prabhupada really appreciates this as a Kshatriya spirit, that he did not, till the last drop of blood in his body, he did not give up. He fought till he could, till he finally dropped dead. So in this way, the Kshatriyas, they are appreciated for having the physical strength and the courage to do to fight when it is needed for the protection of the citizens. And Kshatriyas also they had this spirit of prestige, which means if they give their word to protect somebody, they will do it. They will do it over their dead body. And Arjuna also had once promised to protect a Brahmana. Now this Brahmana, every time a child is born to his wife, that child would die, that baby would just die straight away. And the Brahmana would go to the palace of the king, put the child there and say that this king has done something so sinful that we as citizens are suffering, and for some reason all my children are dying. So eight or nine of his children died. And then Arjuna heard this, and Arjuna said, I will protect your children. So next time your wife gives birth, I will be there and I will protect. So Arjuna used his weapons to build a net so no one can get in, because there was not like a It was not like a physical person who was coming and doing it. It was some mystic power who was taking away the children. So he did that, but in spite of that, the child still died, the baby died. And now Arjuna looked everywhere to find where the child was. And he couldn't find it anywhere on the earth. And he even went to the upper planets. He couldn't find it anywhere. So then he was quite disappointed because he could not keep his word. And he had promised to the Brahmana that if he will not be able to protect the baby, he will give up his life. So then now he felt quite dejected that he was not able to keep his promise. So he decided to kill himself. But Krishna, being his friend, came to protect him and helped him. And then Krishna actually took him to Mahavishnu, who was hiding the children. So the reason why he was doing that was that Mahavishnu wanted to take darshan of Nar Narayan, of Krishna and Arjuna. That's why he wanted to give them a reason to come to him. And he took darshan and then he gave all the babies back, and then Arjuna's life was saved. But the point I'm trying to make is that Arjuna, when he failed to keep up his word that he will protect the Brahmin's babies, he couldn't do that, then he was willing to give up his life. He was prepared to give up his life. He was not scared. So this is the Kshatriya spirit that is meant to be cultivated in the kings, in the leaders. Now, as devotees, how can we cultivate, or how? What do we do with this Kshatriya spirit? How do we manage this Kshatriya spirit if you have it in you? So it is mentioned that book distribution is very challenging, and it can use your Kshatriya spirit if you have it in you, because to be out there in the street and to confront working people and to give them the message of Krishna and to give them a book, it's a challenge. And also, leadership roles. You see, oftentimes we have some projects in ISKCON and you want to do them, and you want devotees to come in and take them up. And they will say, yes, you do it and I will follow you and I will help you. But nobody says, okay, I will take up this project and I will do it as a whole, as a project. So you see, this is so leadership qualities, they are also important, and they come from a spirit where you can be a kshatriya, you can be a leader, and you can do projects in ISKCON if you have the spirit in you. Okay, so today is also the disappearance day of Rasikananda Prabhu, and also disappearance day of Jagannath Das Babaji. So I'll briefly speak about the events. So Rasikananda Prabhu, he was born in 1512, and he was born about 56 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world. So he was actually from a royal family. His father was Raja Achyutananda and his mother was Bhavani Devi. Rasikananda Prabhu was also called Rasika Murari, and he was living in the area which is at the border of Bengal and Orissa. That's where his father was ruling as a king, and then he grew up there. But in very early years, it was apparent that he had very strong spiritual inclination. So he finished his education in the early years, and then it is mentioned that he learned all the scriptures when he was still very young. And then he was anxious to have a guru. So Rasikananda Prabhu was, he used to oftentimes meditate. When will he be able to get a guru? Who will be his spiritual master? Where will he find his guru? So Rasikananda Prabhu used to often meditate, and one time it came to a point where his meditation became so intense. He was in complete trance. And he was very, very desperate to get a guru, that he was just meditating on it. And then the voice from the sky came and said, don't worry, Rasikananda, you will soon find your Guru Maharaj. So you don't need to be in anxiety, you will find soon. So hearing this, Rasikananda was in complete ecstasy, and he cried all night, he couldn't sleep. And while he was crying, then he also had a vision of his guru, who was none other than Shyamanand Prabhu. So Shyamanand Pandit is his guru. And then the very next morning, he was able to meet his Guru Maharaj. And the meeting was not like to meet strangers meeting. It was as if it was arranged by Providence. Shyamananda Prabhu was very pleased to see him. And he was of course very pleased to meet his Guru Shyamananda Prabhu. And it is mentioned that he was initiated by Shyamananda Prabhu. And then very soon he became one of the chief disciples of his Guru Maharaj. He was serving so sincerely that he won the heart of his Guru Maharaj and he won the heart of all his god brothers and other followers of Shyamananda Prabhu. And it is said that he was a very potent preacher. He was a very powerful preacher in the sense that in his area, the Muslims, the atheists and agnostics, all those people who were completely averse to Hari Bhakti, he actually was able to get them to become devotees, and he could transform their hearts. They would give up their sinful ways and they would engage in devotional service merely because he spoke to them and he preached to them. And so Shyamananda Prabhu also had a Govinda deity. And because Shyamananda Prabhu was very impressed and he had a lot of faith in Rasikananda Prabhu, he gave his deity to Rasikananda Prabhu to worship. And Rasikananda Prabhu worshipped that deity so nicely that the beauty and the pleasure of the deity increased many folds. And it is mentioned that Rasikananda Prabhu was so simple-hearted and sincere that it is mentioned in Bhakti Ratnakar, who will not be overcome with emotion on reciting his virtues? He had such great qualities that he was appreciated by all. And later on also, many kings, many Muslim kings and zamindars or big land owners of that time, they came and they surrendered unto him. They accepted him as their guru. And they followed in his mission of propagating the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, Rasikananda Prabhu was once on his way to, he was preaching and having a kirtan with his disciples in Orissa. So then while he was doing his kirtan, he soon reached the Kirtor temple in Remuna in Orissa. So while he was there in that temple, he started very loud kirtan. So while that kirtan was going on, his body merged into the body of Kirtor Gopinath. So he left this world and his body merged. But on seeing this, his disciples were completely shocked and dismayed to see that their guru had left. Their mridangas fell, their kartas fell, and even they left their bodies. So all the 7 disciples who were present there also left their bodies, seeing that their Guru Maharaj had left the planet. So in this way, Rasikananda Prabhu left this, he's finished off his earthly pastimes. His samadhi is Pushkar Samadhi, his flower samadhi, and the flower samadhi of those disciples, his disciples, is still there in the Kirtor Gopinath temple in Remuna, Orissa. And every year a 12-day festival is held to celebrate his presence there and his disappearance there. Okay, so let's talk briefly about Jagannath Das Babaji. So Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj is very well known. He's well known for a lot of his pastimes and activities. And he came in 1750, much later than Rasikananda Prabhu. And he actually was in, he came from a very wealthy family as well. But at a very early age, he moved to Vrindavan. He was very attached to the holy dham, so he preferred to live in Vrindavan. He had a simple small hut and he would do his bhajans in that hut. And one time there was a person, a sweeper, who was sweeping the road in Vrindavan. And he gave a piece of bread to Jagannath Das Babaji. And Jagannath Das Babaji very happily accepted the bread. But the other Vaishnavas, they criticized him. He says, "Why are you taking a bread from a lowly person, from a sweeper?" And Jagannath Das Babaji, his mood was so humble, he said, He said, we all desire to roll in the dust of Vrindavan. We consider it so valuable. And this sweeper is actually the servant of this dust. So then, it is not anything ordinary, but it is Krishna's arrangement that this person is sweeping the dust of Vrindavan. And so then, then this person actually is not just an ordinary sweeper. He is a sage formerly who is just doing this pastime here. So on hearing this, the Vaishnava was really impressed and very satisfied by his humble mood. And then they were not offended anymore. So Jagannatha's Babaji, he was very simple and straightforward in his views and opinions. So once this great professional Bhagavatam speaker came to him, and that Bhagavatam speaker was very, he was very well known and popular because he could sing very nicely. So he had a lot of followers. When he came and met Jagannatha's Babaji, Jagannatha's Babaji pointed out that reciting Srimad Bhagavatam for money is like a woman who's going to different men. So, and after hearing these cutting words, this Bhagavatam speaker did not become offended. In fact, it's the purity of Jagannatha's Babaji that his heart became completely transformed. And he admitted that yes, what he is doing is wrong. And he gave up the professional speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he sincerely became a devotee. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur is also very fond of Jagannatha's Babaji. Bhakti Vinod Thakur is actually the one who gave him the title of Bhakti Sarva Bhauma, the crest jewel of all Vaishnavas. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Jagannatha's Babaji Maharaj used to have a lot of interactions, because Jagannatha's Babaji used to live in Vrindavan for 6 months, and then another 6 months he used to live in Navadvip. So while he was there, he would often meet up with Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur found out how great he was, and that's when he gave this title to Jagannatha's Babaji. Jagannatha's Babaji was more than 100 years old at that time. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur accepted him as his Shiksha Guru because of his great devotion to the Lord. So then Jagannatha's Babaji later on built a small hut in Surabhi Kunj. And if you've been to Mayapur, then in Surabhi Kunj you cross from Mayapur, you take a boat and you go to Surabhi Kunj, and there is Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house. That's where he used to live, and then he used to work in Krishnanagar. So then Babaji Maharaj and Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to hold great discussions for many hours on Krishna Katha. So in this way, they both used to have enlivening discussions on the pastimes of the Lord. Now when Babaji Maharaj used to have his meals, like his prasad, his servant Bihari used to very nicely serve him. So one time when Babaji Maharaj was having his meals, these little puppies came to eat. They were hovering around. So Babaji Maharaj gave them also from his plate, the prasadam. So every time then, whenever he would eat, they would come and he would feed them. And sometimes they would even eat out of his plate. Now just imagine eating food from a plate where the dogs have just eaten. So this was his level of consciousness. Babaji could actually see them. And he also... So one time, Bihari, his servant, he hid those puppies because he did not like them hovering around and eating from Babaji's plate. And Babaji Maharaj asked him, Bihari, where are these little puppies? Oh, he just made some excuse. And then Babaji Maharaj said, till you bring them, I'm not having my prasadam. So then Bihari had to bring them from where he had hidden them. So when the puppies came, then Babaji Maharaj fed those puppies. And he said to Bihari, he said, they are not ordinary dogs. They are residents of the Holy Dham. And we should treat them with equal respect as you would any other Vaishnava. So that was his mood. Bihari would, now because Babaji Maharaj was a great saint and he was a great devotee, a lot of people used to come and guests used to come who would give him some Lakshmi. So he would keep putting them aside in a clay box and a clay pot. He didn't need that. He lived a very simple life, so he would just keep it aside. And then one time he asked Bihari to bring that clay pot and to bring all the Lakshmi. Now mind you, this is time when Babaji Maharaj is so old that his eyelids have drooped. They are drooping so much that he can't see things. And his body is bent over, like rolled over completely, you know, in a bent form. He couldn't walk.
So Bihari used to do all his services for him. And then he asked Bihari to bring that money. So Bihari gave him the money. And he said to Bihari, what about those 12 rupees that you're not giving to me, Bihari? And Babaji couldn't see, but he knew that Bihari had kept some money aside. But of course, he had kept that money aside to meet Babaji's personal needs later on, because he knew that Babaji would spend that money. So what Babaji would usually do is that when he used to have some certain amount of money, he used to feed rasagullas. Like one time he fed rasagullas to all the cows of the holy dham. So that was his mood. He was having a feast for the animals of the holy dham. So that's what he did with all that money. So because his body was bent over, then all the time Bihari had to, even to take darshan of his deities, he would have to, Bihari would actually hold his eyelids up so that his eyes would open and he would be able to see the deities. So such was his condition. He was so old, but he was completely undisturbed by the physical condition that he was in. And it is said that he used to chant very loudly. This was a great quality in him, that Babaji Maharaj would chant very loudly. And sometimes he would be so engrossed in chanting that for many days he would not come out of his hut. And he would stay inside without eating or drinking. And he would just chant. And Bihari would just hear the Babaji Maharaj chanting. And he would wonder, perhaps the next meal I should cook and he would eat. But then Babaji Maharaj wouldn't come out. He would just stay inside and chant for many days together. So, and Babaji Maharaj was very, very strict in following the vows of Chaturmasya. Although he was so old, he used to follow strictly the Chaturmasya, the 4 months. So in the first month, he used to eat only 4 bananas in the evening. So only 4 bananas in the entire day and nothing else. In the second month, he used to eat only guavas. And that's all. For 1 month, second month, that's what he did. And in the third month, he would have a little bit of buttermilk. And he survived on that for the whole of the third month. And the fourth month, he would just eat flowers from the banana tree. So this is how strict he was in following his vows of Chaturmasya. So in a sense, it just means that minimize your eating, minimize your sleeping, and just chant as many hours as you can. That was the whole point, that it shows us that this is what we should do in Chaturmasya. So since Babaji Maharaj used to live in Vrindavan for 6 months and in Mayapur for the rest of the 6 months, and then the Vaishnavs once asked him of Vrindavan, why do you want to leave Vrindavan and go? And he was so humble, he said that I'm so offensive that I cannot continuously live in Vrindavan. I must go to Mayapur, to Navdvip, where Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda are very merciful and they will not count my offenses. Now, he's saying this out of his humility because he was in Babaji Vesh and he barely ate anything or drank anything. He lived in a straw hut and he had no possessions and he was chanting loudly the whole day. See, this is the mood that he had, that in spite of the fact that he hardly ever spoke anything, he felt that he could offend others and he wouldn't live in Vrindavan. So Bihari was traveling and Bihari was carrying him on his head and walking. So they were traveling between Vrindavan and Mayapur. So Babaji Maharaj's body was bent, he couldn't walk. So in a bamboo basket, Bihari was carrying him once. And those days, it used to be all forests. Though the pathways were just little tracks through the forest. And it was all jungle everywhere. And there used to be wild animals. So one time when Bihari was carrying him, he just stopped dead in his tracks. And Babaji realized that he stopped. He said, Bihari, what happened? Why have you stopped? And Bihari wouldn't utter a word. He was so stunned. And then, because a lion had just jumped up right in front of Bihari and he was out of fear, he couldn't say a word. And then Babaji says, don't worry, Bihari, he has just come to take my darshan. Mind you, Babaji cannot see because his eyes are so droopy. His eyes are always closed. He couldn't see and he said, don't worry, Bihari, he has just come to take my darshan. He will be gone in a moment. And that's exactly what happened. The lion just left in a moment and then Bihari was able to continue on. So such was his intense devotion that even the animals came to take his darshan. So in this way, he spent his last few years just even becoming more intense in his bhajan. And then at the age of about 144 years, he left the earthly planet and he joined the eternal abode of the Lord in the form of Rasika Manjari. It is said he is Rasika Manjari in the supreme abode of the Lord. And he is the disciple of Madhusudan Das Babaji, and going back to Baladev Vidyabhushan. So this is how he spent his life here. So on the disappearance day, we know that the acharyas are very, very merciful. So we should pray to them to give us the ability to chant the way they could chant, and to be simple-hearted like they were. And they had no anarthas in their heart, and which we are always struggling to overcome. So we should pray sincerely to Rasikananda Prabhu and to Jagannath Das Babaji today to bless us so we can progress in our spiritual lives. I will end here. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj ki, Rasikananda Prabhu ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Nitai.